One, two. Happy New Year, everyone, from I've Got a Beatles podcast. We're back for another year of recording and craziness and all sorts of Beatle fun. And, you know, what better way to ring in the new year of 2014 than with a great George Harrison album and a great George Harrison song, Ding Dong, Ding Dong. Huh, Chris? You think of a better way?
You know, this is, 2014, a huge, huge Beatle year, a huge, huge anniversary. Of course, we're talking about the 40th anniversary of Dark Horse from George Harrison, which is what we're going to review today. And we're going to let you know if we think this album really is a dark horse an underrated album, or if it's just so sad, so bad.
I don't know if I can top those jokes already. He's already going here. So that's right. We're going to talk about George Harrison's 1974 album, Dark Horse, which I don't know about you, but it has a lot of weird things about it. We did a review of Living in the Material World, which we thought actually was a pretty good album overall. And it was kind of a refreshing thing to listen to it again. It sort of made us excited about it. But I'm not sure. I don't know. Was that the same feeling you had listening to Dark Horse all week?
I wouldn't say I was just refreshed listening to Dark Horse. It's a puzzling album. It's a frustrating at times. At times it's like you think, oh, maybe this is a little, like, everybody's being a little harsh on it, and then it goes to the next song, and then you're like, what? No, come on, this song's awful.
Yeah.
So it's sort of all over the place. I mean, this album was recorded sort of in the spaces in between doing a tour, so that alone would make it a little bit like, well, maybe, you know, maybe that lends to it sort of disjointed kind of feeling, you know, but from track to track, it's just all over the place, if you ask me. Even though, towards the end of this podcast, I'll pose a theory I saw online, which sort of makes it seem like, well, maybe there was a little more going on to it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll look forward to that.
Yeah.
But you mentioned something pretty important, and I think when I think of the album Dark Horse or that song, it's to me really tied up with the tour. And George was the first Beatle to actually do any sort of major tour, which is not what you would expect. You'd think it would have been Paul. But in 1974, George and a bunch of Indian musicians with Ravi Shankar and his regular band that plays a lot on this album went on tour of the U.S. particularly, and a lot of those shows have been recorded. I have a couple, but you think of that tour, and as you said, it was the recording of it was kind of weird. The recording started way back in fall of 1973, and didn't finish until the album wasn't released until December of 1974. So almost a year of kind of off and on recording. They had this tour in the middle, and to top it off. How is George doing these days? Is he having a good year?
Well, 1974, a really rough year for George Harrison. First off, and you can't talk about this album without talking about this, his wife, Patty Boyd, Patty Harrison at the time, and him separated, partially because Patty was in love with Eric Clapton, his good friend. This has happened to me before in my life a couple of times. times where a girl left me for a good friend of mine. So I sympathize for how rough he must have felt about this. So his solution to this was to do a lot of drugs and go on a tour with... I also want to mention about the tour. This tour was a large portion of the concert you would see would be Indian music.
Right.
Which
right.
for a 1974 group of concert goers who were there to see a Beatle was hard sell.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Very much.
But I don't mind him sort of like shoving that down people's throats. Like, here, listen to some cool music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was just in a ragged sort of poor condition the entire tour, especially his vocal cords.
Which, we'll find out as we get from track to track. His voice, vocal quality sort of changes from based on when it was recorded. So, to add along to the or add to this... crazy year. Not only did George do drugs and drink himself to death practically, he took some of Patty's medicine or Clapton's medicine and started having affairs with other women on top of it as well. So I think he was caught sleeping with Ringo's wife, Maureen, and Ron Wood's wife. And I mean, it was like...
What was it with these guys that can't like find girls outside of the three or four pals? Like, you know?
I know, it's weird. So, not a good year, and so it's kind of a crazy time for George to put out an album.
I also want to say about George in 1974 that why he spent the entire year wearing overalls, I really don't know. He looks ridiculous. And any footage from the tour, he's wearing a big yellow shirt with overalls over it. It's like, what is that? Hell are you doing?
Yeah.
But it's a strange. So it was, you know, his rocky love life, overworked, tired guy recording this album. So keep that in mind.
Yes.
Keep that in mind.
But I will say the album doesn't start out sounding like that. It does kind of start out with a bang. And the first track on the album was actually also a song that they played on tour. It was the opening of the tour. And it goes by the name Harry's on Tour, and then in parentheses, Express. Where are the vocals on that one?
No vocals. Ah. One of the very few Marwa blues I'm thinking of, and this are the only, I think the only two George Harrison instrumental, well,
I guess all
didn't
the
he make a crazy instrumental album in the 60s.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's an instrumental tune. They would start the tour, start every show of the tour with this song. Part of the group here was Tom Scott, who you may remember playing on Listen to What the Man Said, very famously. And he also wrote the song Without Us, co-wrote the song Without Us. That's the theme song to Family Ties.
Is that right? He wrote that? Oh, I didn't. Yeah. I used to love that show.
As well as a couple other TV, like his father was a TV, like wrote Dragnet theme song and that kind of thing. So he was that way, but he's mostly as well known as a saxophonist well, he's on the saxophone all over this album, mm-hmm. Including this one. But what do you think of this song?
Well, George got to know these guys. He saw Joni Mitchell. They were Joni Mitchell's backing band, and George went to a concert in London and was really impressed with these guys, and then asked him to come over and record. So they recorded a couple of the tracks on this album, and as you say, Tom Scott's all over it. I think there's a theme on this album that starts to happen a little more in subsequent George albums, and you start to see a little bit of funk, kind of a funk soul feel on this album, and this is that song where you just heard George's slide, a lot of slide guitar, but they had sort of like a funk feel, which is a bit different from his previous songs, and I think it's a good opener. It's a little repetitious, but I think it's not a bad opener.
I think I like it a little bit less than you do. It makes for good. It was a B-side to Ding Dong Ding Dong.
Oh.
But it sounds really dated to me.
Now it does. Yeah, with the horns especially.
The band does sound good, though his lead guitar is kind of weak on this, I think.
Yeah,
very poor sounding. Poor quality.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm just sort of like, to what end is this? Like, what's the purpose of having this on the record? It kind of wastes a lot of record time on this instrumental kind of like. Though, I have heard a live version of this, which was released, one of the few things released officially from that tour, which they recorded a lot of that tour, but they haven't released very much of it.
Yeah.
The live version is a little peppier, a little livelier than mm-hmm. this. And also included some of the Indian instruments just sort of making a weird appearance, just to kind of like get people used to hearing some weird stuff. So I think it's a little too long.
Yeah.
I am wondering, you know, we've mentioned before that George has this sound that's sort of like 1975 Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is perfect,
and
isn't it?
This is quintessential.
Yeah.
To almost to the point where I'm thinking, well, this was released in late 74, and that show started in 75, so I'm wondering a little bit if somebody heard the album and was like, oh, that's what this band should be like. Like, just energetic and peppy, you know?
Yeah, it's a pretty good theory. Yeah.
Possible theory.
Well, I think in one way it's actually a good starting song because you don't have to hear George's voice yet. So you just get it's all instrumental. You don't know what's to come. So what's to come is the next song called Simply Shady. And this one was one of the first songs recorded with the group there, and this has that same group on it with the Tom Scott gang.
Somebody brought juice up. I thought I'd take a sip. Came off the rails so crazy. My senses took a dip.
Well, what do you think of Simply Shady?
Well, I think I might be in the minority on Simply Shady, and I really, really like it.
Oh.
The band sounds good on it. It's a good melody.
Yeah.
And I like some of the suspended chords and some of that kind of... I love the chord progression, particularly in the chorus. I think it's really good. I also like the non-slide solo at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Although I... Although I, once again, don't really like George's guitar sound on this one. But I like the non-slide solo. It's a little bit nasty. It could be even nastier. But I really like it. It's sort of like a... I read one review of this that actually liked it. And they said it had a good, relaxed West Coast sort of vibe to it. Kind of country rock, you know?
Yeah.
And I like it. It also has references the song "Sexy Sadie."
Yes, that's a great line.
Yeah. But I like it, and it is about, you know, the song's kind of about his drug use of the time, and he's being very open about it in interviews. There's a little clip in the George documentary where he says, "Well, it's just like my life's right there on the record. My life right now is right there on the record. It's just like watching Peyton Place or something."
Yeah.
Which is a soap opera.
Yeah.
Soap opera of the time. So anyway, I like it. I the more I listen to this album this week too, the more this one grew in my estimation, and the more another one we'll talk about the future grew in my estimation.
Okay.
And the more irritated I was by some songs.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you. I think there's a quote I want to read from a book by Simon Lang called "While My Guitar Gently Weeps: The Music of George Harrison." He talks about this, referring it to, I know you're a big fan of Neil Young, and he says that at this same time we're getting close to Tonight's the Night, that period when Neil Young was really having some rough days as well, and so he does a comparison of the two, but. He says, "Here George sounds like a confessional Neil Young declaring his duty-free goods at the airport. A few brandy binges and woman trouble. Hence the return of Sexy Sadie. Simply Shady nearly shatters the Beatle George image and reveals the uncomfortable truths of life. Too much drink and failed relationships are hardly uncommon experiences, but for fans readying their Sgt. Pepper costumes for the Dark Horse tour, it was all too much."
Yeah.
So pretty interesting. I like it, actually. I think there's some good stuff on it. The horns are a little more in the background. They're not as overpowering as the first track. And the guitar playing is nice. And you're right about the chord progression. It's good, too. But he says that this guy says it's got Harrison's wobbly vocals scared off many people. So maybe he does sound a little shaky, a little whiny.
I mean, no question Harrison's vocals are crappy on this album. But I think in this song, it bothered me the least.
Yeah. Sounds sincere, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it does, you know, you've got a kind of a rough song about a guy who's struggling.
Yeah,
so
makes sense.
His voice is kind of struggling, too.
That's right. Well, that's true.
Whereas, not so fine on some other ones.
Yeah.
That song was followed on the album by a song we referred to briefly earlier called "So Sad." Let's listen to a little "So Sad."
A That's so sad. It's actually one of my favorite songs on the album. I think it's really good musically. It's, again, a very interesting song. Try tapping your foot during the chorus. There's a meter change. It's a lot of... it does not fit the same old 4-4 pattern. You'll be off by a little bit. So it's very interesting musically. And there's a certain earnestness and a sparseness about it, too, that appeals to me. I think Ringo plays drums on this one, which is a... You can kind of tell his sound on there. And again, it's just, it's kind of follows up on Simply Shady with the confessional type of song here that he's, everything's falling apart. And I think it's, I like it a lot, actually.
You know, this song is most likely about his breakup with Patty. And right there at the beginning, there's a sort of a reference to "Here Comes the Sun," which is you know very sweet love song. But now it's saying, "Now the winter has come, eclipsing the sun that has lighted my love for some time." So I just think those are great lyrics. The drums terrific on this. His slide guitar, especially when he gets really, really high with it, is pretty good. The Nicky Hopkins piano in the background's not too overpowering, just kind of perfect. It's a little long, maybe too overall. Like, if you weren't listening to the album over and over, that you wouldn't catch that this was a good song. It's a little bit forgettable, just a little languid and slow. But as we were digging into this album a lot, this was one of the tracks that sort of improved as the time went on.
And that's this you point out a problem that starts to happen. Actually, started back on Living in the Material World with a lot of these slow songs that are about 5 minutes long that really don't go anywhere. Well, they go somewhere, but it's just a little bit, one verse too many or one chorus too many.
Yeah.
They'd be good if they were a little shorter, I think.
I absolutely think this is right at 5 minutes.
Yeah.
If they could cut a full verse out of this, it would stick with you a little more than it does. It just kind of like leaves you. At some point, you're like, okay.
Yeah, we get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, for the next one, we need to just play it before we even say a thing about this one. It's the most infamous one on the album, probably.
This one's called a very familiar title, Bye Bye Love.
I don't know what old Phil Everly would think about that one, since he just passed away. I don't think he would be too happy about that one. Sorry, Phil. I don't even know where to begin. Bye Bye Love it's been completely corrupted. It's unrecognizable.
Yeah, well, they took half of the lyrics of the song and then wrote new half of the lyrics for a new song. So I don't know what he's doing there. Yeah. It's like, haha, I'm gonna rip off Bye Bye Love, but I'm not gonna get sued this time.
Not yet.
Not yet. And once again, it's another Patty Boyd song.
Yeah, in fact, there's a, on the album itself, I, for some reason, I actually do have the record as well as the CD. I was really into this at one point, but on the credits to the album, it lists Eric Clapton as playing on this and Patty Boyd is playing on it or singing, which neither of them do. This is an all George production, but they're both referenced in the song. So he
so
says
it's a little joke. He was
yeah.
Making.
Do you have that verse ready? That where he talks about old Clapper. There goes Our Lady, meaning Patty. And then he says old Clapper too, meaning Eric Clapton. So trying to, I guess it's like a nasty inside joke or something that really falls flat big time.
I gotta say, this Harrison played all the instruments on this song, and they sound about as bad as you can say. The whatever is, I guess it's a bass. The bass sound of something is just abysmal. Just really bad. There's some weak 1980s Lou Reed albums that have that sort of like crappy bass on it, and I just like churns my stomach to hear. Very, very, very bad.
And, his drums are not very good either, as you were pointing out when you were listening to that. A little bit overuse of the cymbal.
Oh, crazy overuse of the cymbal. You know, I wonder if this is a good time to bring up this. The last time this was released was 1992. So you pretty much can't find it. You can't get a CD of it. It's not available on iTunes. Hasn't been remastered since then. And I'm wondering if this particular track would slightly improve in a little bit of remastering, taking that crazy loud cymbal constant tick, 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 tick on the cymbals, sort of like easing it off a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's a reason they haven't remastered this one. There could be something. And nor has Extra Texture, his next album, has not been remastered either. But this is just atrocious song.
I want to quote biographer Simon Ling.
Yeah, that's the book I've got here.
He says it is, quote, one track on Dark Horse that seriously fails the quality control test. Dot, dot, dot. A desperately bad offer.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
So. Yeah, it's just really bad. I don't like it.
Yeah, no,
not
it's
good at all.
So
additionally, I'm also bothered by it because the next song is also called Something Love.
Yeah,
Bye Bye Love, followed by Maya Love. Let's hear Maya Love.
You're wondering, Maya, which is M-A-Y-A with some dashes or diacriticals over the letters there. Maya, it means illusion. So the idea here is all of these things are illusions, and making another reference to his lost love. But I think this song sounds like Yesterday or Imagine after Bye Bye Love. I mean, it can't... It's like the greatest song ever written after that. So
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't like it very much. I think, first of all, why do you slot another love song after a love song?
Yeah.
It's like Bye Bye Love and then Maya Love. It's like think people get lost a little bit, like, huh?
Yeah.
Like, what? What's happening? There's a lot of, it's a very slow, sort of mid-tempo, but a little bit slow for a mid-tempo groove. It's supposed to be a little more optimistic, like, well, it's not so bad. You know, ladies come and go. Billy Preston's over there. Billy Preston! Billy Preston's over there just playing some, you know, it's just kind of like, this was the other thing. I heard that he wrote this as a slide guitar tune to feature the slide guitar, and then we'll add lyrics later.
Uh-huh.
So, and it does kind of come off like that. So I think it's a little, you probably like it a little more than I do, but I think it's a little dull. And, you know, although they, it is the philosophical conclusion to the relationship, as it is. In the track listing album, it makes sense in that respect. But,
yeah. Well, it goes along with the kind of disjointed nature of this album because it's another different style here. You had the, I don't know what Bye Bye Love was, what sort of style that was, but So Sad was different than Simply Shady. It was different than Harry's on Tour. I mean, it's just like all over the map here stylistically. But I do think this one has some redeeming qualities, especially like Billy Preston's really funky organ or electric piano. Sounds great on this one. And it's a little long, but the horns are kind of cool. It's like a trying to be R&B, sort of a little bit funky. And I don't have as much. I guess I probably like a little bit more than you do.
I'd say the musical interest over greater than the lyrical interest on this, which
definitely.
Is
definitely lazy lyrics. Yeah, lazy lyrics.
That brings us up to Ding Dong Ding Dong, which we played earlier. You want to talk about repetitive?
Yeah, well, this was George getting in on the holiday song thing here. So we had John already with Happy Christmas. I guess this was the next one in line because Wonderful Christmas Time was a little bit later. But this was the next one in and just very tired kind of song here. Ringo's on drums. It's a good group. Tom Scott on there again. But just, plus his voice sounds really awful on this one to me.
The only really redeeming thing about this for me is there is a little 16mm video he made for it, which was the first time he made one of these little films. Later, a little more famously, the Cracker Box Palace video he made that everybody likes. I like this one. It's pretty good. It's kind of funny. And it's got him in Beatles outfits and starting with the black leather jacket. And then he's in a mop top wig, which is kind of funny. And then he's in a Sergeant Pepper outfit. So it's pretty interesting.
Aren't there some gnomes in there, too?
There's some gnomes. There's all kinds of silliness.
Yeah.
It's very silly. If you take it as sort of a silly kind of like light sort of song, then fine.
Yeah.
But it's so repetitive.
Very repetitive. The Simon Lang here again, to quote him, he says, "Ding Dong Ding Dong is still occasionally heard at New Year's parties, but like the rest of Dark Horse, it would have been better hibernating another winter."
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it brings up the point that, you know what, I won't bring up the point because this next song, is a perfect example of this point. So let's go on to the next song and play
the title track, right?
Titular song.
Dark Horse.
Dark horse, running on a dark race course. I'm no blue.
Well, it's a famous song. I'll be generous first.
It's a famous song.
It's the name of George's record label. He thought of himself as a dark horse, which is, of course, the one in the race who you don't expect to win because he was surrounded by John and Paul. So I'm trying to say good things. It's good musically. The weird thing about it, for the title song, he spent a lot of time recording it. This was one of the first songs recorded way back in fall of 73. And then he actually had a pretty decent quality. You can hear it on YouTube. His voice sounded okay, but then he had this idea to re-record it, like, right after the tour, when his voice was really bad. So, I don't know, what do you think of Dark Horse?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't even know where to begin with this. This might be my least favorite George Harrison song.
Really?
Because, first of all, the concept of the idea of Dark Horse and the nickname Dark Horse and all that, I like so much. So this, it's like, George's theme song. Like, this song encapsulates George. And then it's just garbage. It's like, the vocals are horrifying on it. Why record something when you can't physically do it? Why make a record when you cannot do it? Just wait. He just waited plenty later.
Waited too long. Yeah.
For too long until he was not around anymore to make some of these albums. So Brian Hannigan from Melody Maker, quote, coaxes a tremendous amount from his normally unimpressive voice and sings particularly well on the title track. That's insane. That is so untrue.
Well, this is where.
This is what happens with this song. You get such differing opinions on it. People calling it a good song. People saying "Grace with good vocals." It would have sounded really good had it been "Grace with good vocals."
Yeah.
What one guy says, but it irritates me so much because the vocals are terrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where the nickname Dark Horse came from, Horse, the Dark Horse Tour, because if you wanted to hear what he sounded like, this is what he sounded like on the tour. So
Greg Kot, we know Greg
Chicago.
Chicago. He is also a they call him a Rolling Stone contributor. Says the song continues in the condescending autobiographical vein of material world tracks like Light is Light of the World. So he doesn't like that. He's writing this kind of like
preaching.
And I agree. It should have been a better, I like the idea of writing like a sort of theme song for yourself, but it should have been so much better.
Yeah.
If you're going to do your theme song, it's gotta be way better. The pseudo calypso kind of drum thing.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's like a shuffly drum. Come, ta-dum, ta-dum, ta-dum.
Whole song.
Doesn't change at all. Doesn't improve. Doesn't do anything different.
How about that flute? How about the flute solo to go with it?
That crap. That's the worst thing in the world is that crap flute. Choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo.
That's old Tom Scott on the flute.
Oh, as he went, again. That's the whole song there in a nutshell.
There you go.
Really awful. So I don't like the song. Now, you know, there is a live version of it from the Japanese tour. And I listened to that. I thought, ooh. Maybe I haven't given this track enough of a thing. It just came off as boring to me. I just.
Yeah.
I was at Sketchfest. I performed at Sketchfest, and a lot of my friends who are performers in the Chicago community were performing as well. And some of their shows I saw, and I got really mad because they weren't very good, because I know how good they are.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about this song mostly. So.
Yeah. I don't think I can add anything else to that except to say that it is rough. I mean, it's very, very rough. It's trying to be bluesy and it just doesn't do it. So I don't know, but I think the next one is kind of an interesting one. For a couple reasons actually, and why don't we listen to a bit of Far East Man. This is a co-composition, and we'll hold off on telling you who the co-author is until after you hear Far East Man. Yeah, Far East Man. Do you think he might be referring to Ravi Shankar as a Far East Man? I don't know.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of that one?
I really like this song. It is an overlooked gem, if you ask me. If we did it, we could do another. We were talking about doing a worst Beatles solo podcast. If we did a most underrated Beatles solo songs podcast, this might. Mm-hmm. Make the cut for me. I really think it's great. It's sort of like the Bowie Plastic Soul sound of the 75 a nice slow sort of soul groove going on. A great sax playing in it. I really, really like Tom Scott in this one. Mm-hmm. Ron Wood was the co-writer. That was about to get to.
That seems like kind of a miss. I don't know. Would you have envisioned George and Ron Wood hanging out together? I guess so. Maybe.
Well, I gotta meet up to trade back the clothing of
their from the wives,
and they all sleep with each other.
That's true, but maybe also. I mean, Ron Wood was not a front guy either. Like he was. He played with Rod Stewart and the Faces, and he was the guitar player. So kind of like George not being a front man either. So maybe they had that common bond there. But this has a great feel to it. He alludes to it at the beginning. He says, "Is this Frank Sinatra?" Kind of like this loungy soul kind of song here. But I like it. I think it's got a good feel to it and sung well. He doesn't sound like he doesn't sound as raspy on this one.
Yeah, I kind of was like hearing this song, you kind of wish the whole album was a little more like this song.
Yeah,
you know, like scrap all this other crap and make an album that has like some quality to it, like this song does.
You know?
I mean, it's a little bit aggravating, but at the same time I was like, I was always glad to have it pop up, you know, that's towards the end of this thing.
I saw it read somewhere, or I read somewhere that it said this song oozes smoochy soul. It's a pretty good way to look at it here, but I think the band is pretty good too. It's all American players: Andy Newmark, Willie Weeks, who these guys were going to be on a bunch of George's solo albums coming up, so good solid players.
And Billy Preston is fantastic on the song.
Yes.
Now there also we'll go out actually when we end the podcast with a Ron Wood version,
which was first,
which George plays slide guitar and backing vocals on that. Ron Wood sings on it. Mick Taylor plays the bass on it, and some shares Andy Newmark. So
very nice.
So, let's just get Andy Newmark.
Again. Yeah, he knows the tune. We don't have to teach him.
He ain't busy. So that's now. Very short album, this album.
Yeah, only 9 tracks.
9 tracks, the 9th track of which is... maybe you'd like to take a crack at.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't be a George album if you didn't have some Indian reference to it. So this one is called... And this is another good parenthetical title for you, Chris. This is called It Is He, J. Sri Krishna. Well, what do you think? How's this as a closer for the album?
I don't like it.
J. Sri Krishna.
Boring and preachy. That's a given.
That's a given.
But this irritating, crappy wobble board that plays through the second 2/3 of this song is the most irritating, out of place, unnecessary thing ever put on any record. Sort of like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like very loud in the mix too.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
I don't know what's going on with it. You know, and the song starts, and I'm like, kind of, and then I have the memory of hearing the song before.
Yeah.
So I start to have a fear of when this wobble board's going to start.
The wobble board. Yeah, George plays a couple of Indian instruments on this when he plays the, I don't know how exactly you pronounce it, the goob goobie, which is a type of drum, a stringed drum from Bengali, or from Bengal. And there's some others, there's the kamok, which is that little banjo type thing that you hear in the background. So bringing an Indian flair to it. For me, it's boring. But also it's hard to listen to for me. It's very out of tune. Like the woodwinds and the flute, everything's very out of tune. So it's kind of just grating after a while.
Yeah. And it's very, I understand it's supposed to be a repetitive spiritual thing, but it doesn't come off that way. It just comes off as like boring.
Yeah, like it's been done before. Like,
so yeah, it's like, we get it, Krishna. We got
we've heard
this. This is like the 4th or 5th song you've Krishna'd us, and
yeah.
we're Krishna'd up at this point.
Yeah.
So.
And it's also another one of those 5-minute songs too. So another a little bit lengthy for a closer.
Now.
Yeah.
To a couple things here. First of all, and we mentioned this already, but I want to mention again. This is very due for a re-release, hopefully adding some bonus tracks, that kind of thing. Maybe we'll hear some RAR versions.
Or some live versions, maybe. I read that Maya Love was performed live, and it was done very well. So just to hear some of these tunes played with the live band would be interesting.
Well, the first song,
that was really good.
That one sounds better on the in the live version, for sure. So maybe it'll improve. Is it he?
Yeah.
So please re-release that. I know you're listening,
Olivia.
Olivia. So please re-release that.
Speaking of Olivia, one good thing about this album is among the many other affairs he was having at the time, he did meet Olivia, who will later become his wife, and she was the secretary at Dark Horse. So they started up their affair at this point, and as you know, if you're a George fan, she was really the love of his life, and they was his wife all the way until he died.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to say. That's the record, the original pressing of the record. On one side, the A side, it's George's picture, and on the B side, it's Olivia.
That's right. That's right.
And also, and this is one thing I wanted to mention, was that people have already gotten a picture like, well, the A side's a little bit depressing and moody, and the B side's a lot more optimistic.
Yeah.
Well, someone in the thing here, it just says a blogger.
Okay.
Says that this actually is a concept album. That Harrison's character Harry. And you can read this on Wikipedia. This is right off the Wikipedia thing. Begins the album in concert, after which the listener learns the trappings of his rock and roll lifestyle. First, the drug use and unhappiness of so sad, and then he has the Bye Bye Love song, and then he has the Maya Love, which is a little more optimistic. And then ring out the old, ring in the new. Let's move on to the new thing. And then it eventually ends on Far East Man. And, and oh, I found a piece, which is the Far East Man. And,
yeah.
And then let's celebrate him with J-Rod.
Well, that's a creative interpretation.
Could
be. Yeah.
I mean, so, to most of us, it sounds like a bunch of crap thrown together. but I could definitely, kind of see a little bit of that, at least. Well, what do you think of it being so short, 9 tracks?
Yeah, I think if it were any longer, I think it would be really tedious, even more tedious than it is.
That's true.
It's just too many 4.5-5 minute songs on there. What would you say for the overall, or just the kind of putting it together on Dark Horse? Yeah.
Ratings wise
on this one.
Well, here's the problem with it. There's a couple underrated songs on it and a couple real bad songs. Bye Bye Love.
Yeah.
Is it He's Not That Good? I don't like Dark Horse for many reasons.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to give it. And until it's re-released and sounds better.
Yeah.
And considering his vocal performance on it, I think I have to give it 4.
Yeah. That hurts, I know.
It hurts. I want to give it a... Because I really do like Simply Shady more than most people do.
Yeah.
A Far East Man, I think, is really underrated, but the rest of it is like me.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't go much higher than that, based on the fact that it doesn't hold together very well to me. It's too disjointed. So there are, like you say, some good songs. Like I'm a big fan of So Sad and Simply Shady, and I like the feel of My Love and things like that. But it's just too all over the place. So I'd probably give it maybe 5, something like that. Somewhere in the, not... If All Things Must Pass is a 9, then 9 or a 10, then Dark Horse, probably half of that.
I am very interested to hear what our listeners think on this one. If you are out there, if you're listening to us, go to Facebook, I've Got a Beatles Podcast, and let us know what you thought about this record. It's such a strange record. Or if you can even get this record, you know, you can always, you know, go to YouTube or whatever and stream it or whatever. So
and even better, if you were there when this came out, if you were a fan growing up and you were maybe into the Beatles solo releases and you were excited when this one came out, love to hear if your thoughts at the time and then if, how your thoughts might have changed as you hear it now. Because sometimes, I mean, we, Chris and I were not first-generation fans, and we came after that. So sometimes it's helpful to hear what it was like in the time. So, yeah, feel free to post on our Facebook page about that. And we hear from a lot of you, and we appreciate that. So keep the dialogue going.
Yeah, and of course you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and all that stuff. I did want to mention, though, I was asked specifically by a listener who started listening more recently, and you can only get so many of the episodes on iTunes, how to listen to the older episodes if you want to. Some of those have extraordinarily bad sound quality. So if you want to go to ivegotabeatlespodcast.podbean.com, ivegotabeatlespodcast.podbean.com. Or just type "I got a Beatles podcast" in Google. It'll be the first thing that comes up. You can go and scroll down, and then there's a button for previous entries, and you can go all the way back to episode one.
Wow,
the White Album episode.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Or episode seven, defending Ringo.
Oh yeah.
Check out "Don't Let Me Clown" episode six, which is the. John Lennon's poor career moves.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, it's pretty funny going back now. Yeah.
So please do that. It'd be great to hear or have you hear those old ones.
Sure. And also in our next episode, whenever we get that out, we'll give a report from the International Beatles Celebration Conference in Altoona, Pennsylvania, which is happening over the big 50th anniversary of the Beatles coming to America. And so I'll give you the full report, and we're still working on maybe getting some interviews and talking to some people there. So I'll let you know the result of that.
We're looking forward to a great new year. We're going to have a lot of podcasts for you. Not jokingly, we'll have a lot about the 50th anniversary stuff. So let's go out, though, with Ron Wood's version of the aforementioned Far East Man.